Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving. Hello?
Ron, it's Ken.
Ken!
Listen,
Ken, where are you? It's podcast time.
I can't do the podcast today. I'm really suspending my role in the podcast to deal with the financial crisis.
Ken, you don't need to do that. They figured it out. They're going to work it out.
I'm not sure there's really a deal. The podcast can't come first before the bailout. I have to work on this.
Ken, I can see you outside the studio.
What do you mean?
Why don't you come in, sit down, and let's just do this.
Okay. And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, I'm so glad that you've decided not to suspend.
But somebody has apparently suspended his campaign. And
I was wondering if perhaps you had a model in this behavior.
Yes, I do. And it's Claudia Schiffer. Bob Schiffer. It's Bob Schiffer. One of my favorite models.
Bob Schiffer. Yes. So the model that you had in this behavior was one of the two presidential campaigns. I'm going to guess John McCain.
Tomorrow morning, I'll suspend my campaign and return to Washington after speaking at the Clinton Global Initiative.
So, Ken, brilliant masterstroke from a political standpoint or transparent ploy?
Both, I think. I think the reason I think it's both is because there are a lot of Republicans who do like the fact that their erstwhile leader of the party, John McCain, is coming to Washington and almost giving them cover because, look, they're very wary. They don't want to break from their president, but they also know that they have a re-election to deal with in less than 6 weeks. And so I think McCain gives them cover. But at the same time, John McCain needed something to shake up his campaign. He's seen the polls, as everybody else has, that the economic uncertainties has really given Obama a lead, perhaps not an enormous lead.
No.
The Washington Post showed him 9 points. I think that.
But that's an outlier. There are no other polls that are that.
Exactly. And if you look at the NPR polls of state-by-state polls, that's very, very close.
Very close. Within
fact,
the margin of error.
And my veins
and
are very close.
Very close, also within the margin of error. All right. Well, let's hear what Obama himself had to say in response to Mr. McCain's offer to suspend their campaigns.
You know, presidents are going to have to deal with more than one thing at a time. It's not necessary for us to think that we can only do one thing and suspend everything else.
Ken, let me just put it to you. Do you think that you can do just one thing and suspend everything else, or do you think it's possible for you to do everything else and drop the one thing?
Well, I think the answer is yes. No, but you know what?
Put that BlackBerry down. I want you to get off your email. I don't want you talking on your cell phone. I want you to be present here at this podcast. This is your job now.
Sorry. Okay. But what was interesting to me is that John McCain does give the speech saying that we should put politics aside, but only a day or two earlier, he was blaming Barack Obama, if not for the financial crisis, but of course his role is ties to Freddie and Fannie, our two listeners. And of course, John McCain did not exactly put politics aside.
This is interesting. After he had suspended his campaign and told David Letterman he wouldn't appear on Letterman's show Wednesday night, David Letterman literally saw John McCain in an interview room with Katie Couric.
Here, take a look. Do we have it on the thing?
This is
going live. There he is right there.
He was imbued with a Democratic.
Doesn't seem to be racing to the airport, does he? This just gets uglier and uglier. Let's just see what he has to say here. This would be interesting. I wonder if he'll mention me. Hey, John, I got a question. You need a ride to the airport?
The next morning, John McCain shows up for a non-political event with that very non-political fellow, Bill Clinton.
And Bill Clinton gave John McCain great credit. He said, you've broken with your party. You're a real maverick. I mean, you know, every time I hear Bill Clinton speak, you know that he's 110% or 1,000%.
120%.
1,000% for
1,010%.
Tom Eagleton and Barack Obama. And yet he says these things and say, oh, geez, does he really want to say this? He probably does.
I think Bill Clinton has a pretty good idea what he's saying most of the time. Now, tell me why it would be necessary for the debate on Friday night to be postponed for John McCain to be able to make his contribution to the financial crisis.
Because, I'm trailing in the polls. No, that's not fair.
Well, that would not necessarily be fair. Isn't there something that John McCain could achieve here, perhaps by changing the tone of the discussion, by getting everyone sort of called back to their national responsibilities as opposed to their rather parochial partisan interests. Can he gather everyone in the temple and get everyone to pay attention?
Well, he certainly has gotten everybody's attention with this move of his about you know, putting politics aside. Of course, Barack Obama says, no, the debate should go on and will go on. As far as the Commission on Presidential Debates is concerned, it will go on, too. But John McCain makes the point, tries to make the point that, look, one of us, either myself, John McCain, or Barack Obama, will be the next president of the United States. And this is a financial situation that is certainly not going to end before January 20th, 2009. So, therefore, we should be involved in this.
Yes. And involved, though, in what sort of way? Should they be taking the leadership role of gathering everyone together and saying, now you must all reason together and come up with a bailout plan that all Americans will love? Or is their role to play senators and vote on it when it comes to them?
Well, it's a multifaceted role for John McCain. One of them is that many members of the Congress, Republican side, are very unhappy about this bailout. Philosophically, it's everything they've been opposed to their whole careers.
I heard there were only 10 House Republicans who had committed to voting for it out of nearly 200.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly that. And look, George W. Bush is not up for re-election on November 4th. These members of Congress, certainly all the members of the House who are running for re-election, are. Do you want to take the wrath of all your constituents and vote for a bailout that is very unpopular with the American people?
I would say that the ideal thing to have, if I'm a House Republican, would be to have somebody else bail out the financial system, to do it perhaps with the taxpayers' money, if that's the only source that could actually accomplish it, and then be able to vote against it and say it was a terrible idea and go to my constituents and say, the financial system's been saved. Yes, you can still use your line of credit with your bank. Yes, you're not going to lose your job. But I'm against that bailout because that really wasn't a very good bailout plan, and so I voted against it.
But Democrats will say that this was not our problem, or at least our making the problem. This has been in the works by this administration for the past 8 years. We are not going to be the ones who are going to vote for this bailout and let Republicans off the hook politically.
Well, if the two parties take that approach, then there won't be a bailout deal.
We're speaking, by the way, we should say that on the Thursday, hours before McCain and Obama are going to meet at the White House.
Well, it's also several hours after the president went before the nation on Wednesday night, and in a highly unusual appearance because the president hasn't come out and given a primetime address of this kind in quite a long time, he came out and said, look, I know that $700 billion is a lot of money. I know that you're angry with the people who are responsible for this and that you, the average American, would not be responsible for this. But we need this $700 billion to bail out the financial industry, whether we like it or not, because otherwise the damage and the disconnection and the breakdown in the credit markets is going to cost everybody big time.
And immediately.
Now.
Exactly.
It has to be today.
Not that long ago, I thought the markets were, everything was fine, the markets would adjust, everything would work itself out, and suddenly it's henny-penny, the sky is falling, and it has to be done immediately. There are those, I suspect, who said that, well, you know, the administration tried this with Iraq, they tried this with the Iraqi war. They tried this with the Patriot Act, that it has to be done. This will solve everything. And yet, I think more and more people are less willing to trust an administration who have tried this in the past.
This is certainly an illustration of why a White House and administration needs credibility. Sometimes it's been suggested that, well, if you're just aggressive enough and you're strong-minded and willed enough, you can go ahead and put in place the policies you want and other people will just have to adjust to it. But if you do that and then you're proven to have been wrong in a couple of these instances, certainly in terms of the weapons of mass destruction, then when it comes to the next time when you really need people to respond quickly in a crisis and you need the country to get behind you, they're going to consider you the boy who cried wolf.
And everybody agrees that we are in dire straits. Express Our Love, right?
Yes, always one of my favorites.
My favorite, 1981.
Mm-hmm. You are so old.
1981?
You are incredibly old. The listener was born way after 1981, Ken.
You know, Frank Lautenberg was first elected to the Senate in New Jersey in 1982 as the young guy against Millicent Fenwick. And now look at him. He's 117 years old.
That's true. And Millicent Fenwick is doing bathing suit commercials.
She passed away.
I'm sorry to hear that.
But as long as we're on the subject of New Jersey, Frank Lautenberg is one of those senators, those 12 Democratic senators, 23 Republican senators up for re-election this year. Our listener says, why don't you talk more about Senate races? And therefore, we will briefly. So, Ron, you start.
All right. There are 35 Senate seats on the ballot this year.
Right.
23 of them currently held by Republicans, only 12 by Democrats. That's good news for the Democrats because they don't have to defend most of the seats they hold. They are almost guaranteed holding their majority in the Senate.
And the only ostensible vulnerable Democrat is Mary Landrieu, who's running against John Kennedy.
Can you call somebody ostensible vulnerable? That's ugly.
And the only Democrat worth talking about is Mary Landrieu, who, not because of anything she's done wrong, but demographics.
Oh, Louisiana is a disaster
exactly.
for the Democrats. But it's probably the best state in the union in terms of movement towards the Republicans. And by the way, they even nominated a former Democrat named, of all things, John Kennedy to run against Mary Landrieu. And he's a statewide elected official. And a lot of people thought he had a pretty good shot against her. Now she's going to have to win Louisiana by winning the white vote. She can't win by getting just enough white votes and doing it on the preponderance of black votes. There aren't enough black votes in the post-Katrina Louisiana.
Right, although the polls show her in good shape. Where is there at least...
That must mean then that she is, in fact, winning the white vote in Louisiana based on the work that she did post-Katrina, bringing the bacon down to Louisiana to get things shorn up.
Republicans, on the other hand, are not as fortunate. Ted Stevens in big trouble. John Sununu in New Hampshire.
Incredible. The most senior Republican in the Senate is not only in trouble in November, but he's, in fact, being tried as we speak right here in Washington, D.C.
Right. He's being tried among his peers. The crimes he allegedly committed were in Washington, D.C. Thus, the trial is in Washington, D.C.
And they couldn't find, a jury of 12, 85-year-old World War II veterans who had gone to Alaska during World War II.
You mean besides
us? Most powerful figure in the entire state.
Exactly.
Now, it's very hard to find a jury of Ted Stevens peers, even in the Senate. So
I think if there is a Sarah Palin effect, it might be interesting to see if it works in Alaska. I don't know if it anywhere else.
Well, would Don Young survive in the House seat there?
Nope,
he won't.
Gone.
So that's a limit on the Palin effect.
Right.
I suspect
except for one thing about Sarah Palin's lieutenant governor ran against Don
Young. That's right. So she is perceived as being against Don Young and somewhat more friendly with Ted Stevens,
somewhat,
if I'm correct.
That's correct.
Hey, what about Mississippi? There's actually a Republican seat in Mississippi that might not be safe. Could you talk about that, Ken?
This is the one that Trent Lott resigned unexpectedly last year and...
To become a lobbyist.
Governor Haley Barbour appointed Roger Wicker, the very well-known Roger Wicker from the north of the state, congressman.
Well, now, come on now. Let's be fair. I mean, Roger Wicker has been in the United States House for a number of years now.
Since 94.
And he was, I believe, the senior member of the House delegation on the Republican side. So he was a logical nominee.
Not known statewide, whereas the Democrat is Ronnie Musgrove, who
used to be governor.
Right. Whom Haley Barbour defeated. And so it's obviously that Haley Barbour really wants Roger Wicker to defeat Ronnie Musgrove. And I suspect...
But
that will be the case.
I know Roger Wicker.
Yeah.
I've worked with Roger Wicker, and he is no Haley Barbour.
Yeah.
But then who is?
That's right. We have Gordon Smith. Those numbers in Oregon have narrowed. His lead over Jeff Merkley has
strictly can numbers narrow?
Yeah, sure.
Margin narrows.
Yeah, well, if
the separation between two numbers may narrow. Numbers themselves remain stated width.
If Mary Landrieu can be ostensible, then I think numbers can narrow. And there's also John Sununu, who is still trailing in every poll against Gene Shaheen in New Hampshire. He's probably the most vulnerable. He and Ted Stevens.
But Ken, the only poll that matters is the one they take on Election Day.
Yeah, right.
Do you think John Sununu survives in New Hampshire?
If I had to bet, I'd say no.
I don't think I've seen you think that long for any reason ever.
Well, I had to think of that. The Senate races are very important to me.
I understand.
Ron, do you have predict? I predict that the debate will take place as scheduled on Friday night. Yes or no?
Yes. And I don't think that necessarily means there has been a bailout agreement. But I think what will happen is they'll get close enough that they'll say, we have an agreement. We think we have a deal. And John McCain will say, then I am free to go on to Mississippi and debate my opponent, who, by the way, was not willing to suspend his campaign for the sake of the country.
Exactly. I suggested all these town hall meetings. Barack Obama said no. I suggested putting politics aside. Barack Obama said no. But fortunately, we have come up with this agreement, or at least the framework of an agreement.
Thank God we can go on now to talk about foreign policy, having cleared up all our little petty domestic
problems.
And
speaking about that, we know that Barack Obama has gotten a big jump in the polls. Because,
not a big jump. He's gotten back ahead.
Right.
Several points ahead, maybe.
The economy, the uncertainty has given Obama a boost. But as we saw in 1980, a dead even race between Carter and Ronald Reagan going into the debate. Now, of course, then it was only one debate, and it was late in the campaign, October 28th. But the debates are the ball game. The perceptions that voters come out after these, hopefully, three debates and a VP debate will determine the next president of the United States.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Hear me? I don't hear anybody.